Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Coca-Cola Consolidated, which is, I'm told, the largest independent Coke bottler in the country. Evidently, it's being reported that they have returned and joined the American Legislative Exchange Council. Alec, you may remember there was a big push a couple of years ago to get all of the big corporations who were funding Alec to bail on them. Walmart, Coke, UPS, there are a bunch of them. And there was a big push to expose what the American Legislative Exchange Council was doing, basically writing our laws, handing them to legislators that they had cultivated, wined and dined and funded, and got their legislation pushed through. And there are those who say, well, you know, that's the American system. And it is. It's money at work. To see now this largest bottler of Coke products now joining back, to me, sending the wrong message, and kind of scary that, you know, we haven't been paying too much attention to this. And here to share some thoughts on why this might be important and where what we should be doing, I've asked Ivy Schlegel to come talk with us. She's a research specialist there at Greenpeace International. Ivy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Great. Thanks.
So am I getting this right, that we've got this Coke bottler, the largest here in the U.S., who have now decided, nope, we want to go back to funding Alec, and we're going to be part of the American Legislative Exchange Council's attempt to subvert our democracy and overwrite our laws and buy our laws.
Yeah, we were just as surprised as you to see this news yesterday, especially as for all the reasons that you've said. No company affiliated with Coca-Cola should be going anywhere near the American Legislative Exchange Council, especially with all that we know now about its years of lobbying for an oppressive and discriminatory agenda.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and this is one of those moments where, you know, most people don't even have never heard of Alec and never heard of them before a couple of years ago. And these are people who, you know, companies have paid for years to write model legislation that legislators then take and put their name on it, probably don't even read it, and push it through our legislative process. And this is how corporations get their way, where we the people don't. So I think exposing this is really important. And I guess the other question is what can we do about it?
Well, this is a great question. I think one of the things, as you point out, many people don't realize, and one of the reasons why Alec has been so successful is that it has often been secretive. So, you know, change a few words here and there into this legislation, and, you know, then it can continue. And at this point, sometimes, you know, the legislators can just write what they think Alec might want to see. So a lot of times the corporations are, you know, looking to, you know, sort of gain brownie points. Legislators might want to show their, you know, their right wing stripes, you know, and so they're trying to sort of guess what might the model legislation be and write it to conform to that. So, you know, I think being aware of the role of corporate lobbyists, you know, they benefit when it's secretive. They benefit when people don't know what's going on. And I think that having the corporations, they are more accountable to their consumers. You know, and so that's what we've seen when they hear from their consumers that the consumers are unhappy with the advocacy efforts that they're taking. If they're on the wrong side of things, you know, they will respond. And they were running scared on this, as you said, years ago. So,
yeah, while people were paying attention, and now I guess the pressure is tapped down a little bit. So then the next question that comes into my mind is, you know, why would this, you know, this Coca-Cola Consolidated company, this the largest, the independent bottler of Coca-Cola, why would they at this moment choose to sign up? Is there something that they're expecting to come down the line? Is there something that you can think of that would make them go, hey, we need this and we need it now, and we'll take the political heat, we'll take the bad PR. We can't have Joe Biden and those evil Democrats do something bad.
Yeah, it's hard to say. So, you know, I don't want to speculate entirely, you know, but as a soda bottler, one of the largest in the United States, you know, they could have a lot of reasons for wanting to lobby, you know, all different kinds of regulations. They want to influence, create the conditions more favorable to themselves. But one thing we do know related to soda, you know, is the issue of plastic pollution. And this is something as more and more people become aware of the scope of the plastic pollution crisis, You see the pictures of the turtle in its nose, and more communities have stepped up and started to take action and started to regulate plastic, you know, a ban on plastic bags or plastic straws, or taking it even further and, you know, banning all different types of plastics. So we know from our research that ALEC has worked for the plastic industry and has developed model bills to fight plastic bag bans and has been very active in banning those bag bans. So this is something that ALEC has been doing. So you could imagine that a company that sort of does rely on plastic for its business model might have an interest in ensuring that that type of legislation continues. And just, yeah.
No, that's where my mind goes. And one of my big problems with Coke and Nestle and a number of, and even Pepsi is, you know, they're one of the, they're the largest bottlers of water in the country. And I'm going, why in the hell are we putting water into plastic bottles? When I was a kid, you had drinking fountains in every park and every school. You had all kinds of things. We didn't put water in bottles, in plastic bottles, and throw them away constantly. It seems
Absolutely.
Stupid to me. That you would pay more for a bottle of water than you pay for a gallon of gas.
It is. And the PR industry associated with the plastics industry has worked overtime to convince people of this fact. And so not only is the plastic bottle necessary that they said, but you have to wrap it in shrink wrap to keep it safe. And one of the things that we saw this year, especially in the early parts of, in the early days of the pandemic, we saw the plastics industry just go into overdrive, exploiting people's fears around the coronavirus, to make people believe that the plastic, the reusable bags were spreading the coronavirus. So all of these different fossil fuel-funded front groups started spinning these stories and passing off industry-funded research. Many of these have been affiliated with ALEC and have been behind this model legislation for years. So, you know, this is what you see when an industry is desperate to retain its myth. If that's all it has is this myth that plastic is necessary, you know, it'll double down on that. And it's really shameful.
No, it is shameful. And which is why when I saw this story that, you know, this evil monster is coming back and, you know, someone's funding it, immediately my mind goes to why. And then how do we make sure that whatever it is that is being worked on in the back rooms, you know, when the money calls are being made, how do we shine light on it? How do we draw attention to it? And how do we get people to know when it pops out that we speak out against it?
Right. And Coca-Cola is one of the largest users of plastic out of all of the brands. It's constantly in the top rankings for top polluting companies. They have an enormous influence over you know, the rest of the industry. And so if they stepped up and shifted away from plastic, this would also have a ripple effect across the whole industry. They could, or as you mentioned, drinking fountains and, you know, water bottles, we could have a different kind of soda industry, beverage industry that relied on reuse models. And companies like Coca-Cola could take additional steps and innovate and use all of their resources and logistics supply chain in order to really innovate new solutions. And I think with people, you know, we sort of know what's at stake. You know, our entire planetary health is at stake. We need to resolve the plastic pollution crisis and the climate crisis. So these companies, they have a lot more to do. And so far from Coca-Cola, we have seen very little action from them. We've seen a lot of promises, and they really amount to very little than sort of focus on recycling and sort of other false solutions.
So what do you think the future of the industry would, if you had a vision of where it would go, where would it go? I mean, when I was a kid, you know, soda came in bottles, you know, and and they were heavy. Transportation was difficult. You had glass problems. There was arguments against that as well. So what is the direction forward then if plastic isn't the answer? Because I know some of my conservative friends are going, well, you know, then what are you going to go to, smart guy? You know, this is the easiest. This is the best solution we have. Where are you going? So what would be a better solution?
Yeah, like I said, there isn't an easy solution, you know, and we are at a time and the scale, scope, urgency of our climate chaos and climate violence really requires us, you know, to really think bigger. So we all have to play a part. And I think that, you know, like there are some transportation challenges. We believe that these can be overcome. We believe that whole innovative systems of reuse are possible. They're doable. They can be safe. They can be safe and sanitary even during the pandemic. We think there's value in good jobs to be had. So I think if you think about these things in a holistic way, you know, reuse could become, you know, more commonplace. Exactly like you said, we just use things so quickly for seconds, you know, and that was so much natural gas that went into it. So there could be even systems like, you know, cities and municipalities could sort of have, you know, different kinds of reuse. You know, even now we could be using dishwashing in restaurants that are currently sitting idle and have sort of a, you know, citywide system. So there's lots of different ways it could happen.
Yeah, but, you know, we were told that, you know, by recycling, you know, every day, you know, my wife gets on me, oh, you got to put that in the recycling. You got to make sure it's got a number on the bottom. Make sure you get it in the recycling bin. We were told that we could use this stuff and recycle it. And it wouldn't be bad. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing?
That is what we have been told. I am like your wife. I look at everything. I look at the number. I'm very diligent about my recycling bin. But the more I've researched and the more data we all understand and can see about the recycling industry, we can see that it's just not working. They've had years to build it up and build it out. To date, only 9% of the plastic ever produced has been recycled. And we have very low annual recycling rates. And there's no way that any of the recycling can keep up, especially with the planned increase in plastic production. So, you know, it's just this continuous like flood of plastic coming into, you know, our homes every day. And recycling isn't the answer. It isn't the way out of it.
Yeah, because, you know, when I was a kid, you know, again, this is, you know, going back into the 70s and 80s, they had glass soda bottles, and you used to collect them, take them back to the store, and they would give you money for them. You had to pay a deposit on them when you bought the stuff and you brought them back, you got your money back. Is that a solution forward? Did that work at all back then, or was that just something, you know, they trashed those bottles anyway, or did they reuse them? I'm curious how that worked.
I think there's room for those types of systems. So anything that does sort of create an incentive for the bottles to be collected would help. Right now that doesn't exist at all. You could also have the producer, you know, the companies that are allowed to profit from the disposables, sort of pay into the system to ensure the collection. So that would be sort of a bare minimum. Those are some things that would sort of put a floor on the rapidly sinking recycling system. But down alone, that's not going to sort of overcome the problem if you have a continuous flood of new plastic coming onto the market.
Right. But because people aren't going to stop drinking soda. That's not going to happen. As much as we may think that's going to happen, it's not. We're not going to stop consuming what's in those plastic containers. So my thoughts and my question is, how do we as consumers get the things that we demand while still saving the planet or not making it any worse? I guess that would be the first step, and being able to not continue to pollute with what we're getting.
Right. But it is interesting too, Coca-Cola, they do have in Brazil, in fact, there is a higher rate of reuse. So they still use much of the Coca-Cola and other sodas that's sold is actually in returnable and refillable bottles. And it works there for a couple different reasons. It's sort of culturally normed. A lot of those bottlers are sort of generational family businesses. They've sort of, you know, have a system that works. And so you could imagine, maybe that's different than here, you know, very different place. You could also imagine, though, there are many places if we were sort of on a smaller scale. You know, part of this is sort of reimagining our food systems, how things get to us, and that things might have to shift in scale a bit in order to sort of meet those sustainability goals, and really ensure Coca-Cola can have a business and we can keep having soda, because otherwise we risk losing it all.
Right. Now, that's an excellent point you make, because in other countries, the people that I've talked to who live in other countries, they don't have the same kind of packaging that we have. I met a guy in Germany who says, you know, when you get a toy from the store, you know, you've got all kinds of, you know, plastic that attaches it to its this and to that and twist ties and stuff in a box. He said, we don't have that. In fact, we leave the stuff at the store usually and let them dispose of it properly. So their consumer products have much less into them than we do. And I think that's something that I don't know how we got to have all of this stuff, but maybe look at that.
Exactly. There is a lot of unnecessary packaging. So there's a lot of high impact areas where companies, if they made, you know, strong decisions, they could eliminate a lot of it. You know, packaging is the largest end-use segment of all the plastic produced. Close to 40% of it goes to plastic packaging. Most of that design be used in seconds. So, you know, a lot of those things could just be eliminated. And then, you know, perhaps, you know, have less, you know, much, much, much less plastic in the world. What if it was sort of a niche item reserved for things that are really necessary to have disposable?
Now, what do you think of a pollution tax? Like, you know, if you're not going to recycle this stuff, you know, you're going to pay higher for the packaging and maybe put, you know, a higher cost on plastics. Is that something that's, I know nobody wants to hear that, but at some point there's got to be a disincentive to continuing this you know, overuse and discarding of this stuff, right?
Right. So things like, yes, a polluter pays principle would sort of reverse the dynamics right now. As it currently stands, all of those costs are sort of externalized into the world, and then consumers end up paying for it, you know, either end, particularly people that live near the plastic production plant and face higher rates of cancer, higher rates of asthma. And now that we know the relation between COVID and, you know, health impacts, especially, you know, so these costs are sort of already out there. It's just being borne by people and consumers, and also people all over the world who have to, you know, are faced with the plastic being exported, you know, for waste. So
yeah. Sadly, yeah, we're Americans, Ivy. We don't care about those people in other countries at all. And we don't even care about the people who live near the plastic plants because they're poor.
Yep. Yes. Yes. Many people did not know until a few years ago when China said they didn't want our plastic anymore. Many people had no idea up until that point that so much of it was exported to China, you know, and many of us do. We think we throw it away and that's it. Yeah. I threw it away. So, you know, now we're finding out that there is no way.
Yeah. Last question I got for you. You know, what do we do about this? Is there an action that you guys are putting out there? Someone we should contact, or should we open up the window, yell or something? What?
Yes. So we believe that the top polluting brands, they love to hear from their consumers. They know that plastic pollution is something people care about. So you can always give them a call. You can always email them and tell them your thoughts. They, you know, they want to hear that the solutions are not just coming from Greenpeace, but that they are coming from people and that everyone cares. They are running scared. They will do more if they hear more.
There you go.
Yeah.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease. There you go. Ivy, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Great stuff. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. This was great. Have a great night.
You as well. Thanks so much, Ivy Schlegel, research specialist there at Greenpeace. You want to check out their work. We'll get links out on how you can do that. Greenpeace.org, I believe, is their website. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.